It's time for the Matt and Jeff Radio Hour from PopDose.com and Addicted to Vinyl. Now, here are your hosts, Matt Wardlaw and Jeff Giles.
Welcome to another edition of the Radio Hour. This is your host, Matt Wardlaw. My good comrade, Jeff Giles, he is here in spirit today. Even if you don't hear his voice, rest assured, he's only absent in theory. So where are we? We're back in Cleveland, Ohio, sitting backstage at the Winchester to have a conversation with the great singer-songwriter who has logged many, many miles working his craft. And if you talk about the 10,000 hours, this guy's put in those hours and then some over the years. And he has a new album called American Ride, which you can find in stores as we speak. And if you want an endorsement, how about these words? Here's a quote for you. It's a ride, all right, on foot, on horseback, with the occasional roller coaster thrown in. There are a few Americas here to discover. The mythic, the magic, the very real. One of the great guides to unraveling the mystery that is the troubled beauty of America. Those are some words there that was said by Bono. That's heavy, heavy stuff. How great is that? Let's welcome Mr. Willie Nile to the Radio Hour. Willie, how are you, sir?
I'm fine, Matt. Nice to be here.
You can't ask for a better endorsement
than those
words from Bono. And what a spokesperson to have speaking on your behalf.
Well, he's a great, great, great guy. Very generous and kind of him to say those words to help get the word out about the album. Yeah, it's a thrill for me. He's a good cat.
Well, let's jump right in. Let's talk about this new record. The album's called American Ride, as I said. And, you know, how'd this new one come about for you?
Well, I'm always writing songs. And 2 years ago, I put a record out called The Innocent Ones and my own label. And it did very well and made Rolling Stone's top 10 best of under the radar albums of the year. And somebody must have snuck it in there and weren't paying attention when they were typing it up. But so I had a batch of songs. American Ride was one of the songs I'd had in the collection I thought would be a good anchor for an album. And another song, Life on Bleecker Street, I thought, you know, so I gathered a collection of songs together. And the band that I've been touring with the past few years, we went in the studio, recorded it, and had a great time doing it. And it came out really good. And it came out well enough that there's a big label, Loud and Proud, or an indie label, but they go through Sony distribution, and they're excited about it. They're going to help us get the word out about it. So they're songs from the heart, songs from experience. You know, maybe what was William Blake's thing? Songs of innocence, songs of experience. It's in that falls in that world, I think.
Tom Lipsky's the guy behind Loud and Proud. Is that somebody you knew before? Like, where did he come in?
I didn't know Tom Lipsky. I met him. One of my managers goes way back with him. They're old friends. And when I met him, I was really surprised, pleasantly so, and impressed with his enthusiasm. You know, he shook my hand. The first thing he said, I just want to say, I'll not beat around the bush. I want this to be my first release on Loud and Proud now that it's going through Sony. And he's very enthusiastic about it, and I haven't had a record company like this behind me in 22 years, so that's cool.
Well, I want to ask, Stuart Lerman worked with you on this record, and he's somebody that has been in your circle for quite a while, quite a few records. What are the important elements that he brings to a project and like this album from your perspective?
I've known Stuart since 1987, 1988, when I signed with Columbia. He's a great guy. He won a Grammy this past year for Boardwalk Empire. He produces all the music for the HBO series.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
And what he brings, Stuart works. He's really coming into his own. And Stuart has a great, the vibe is always very relaxed in the studio. He's easy. Nothing's uptight. And the atmosphere is very conducive. There's great instruments, amplifiers, all kinds of great musical things around the studio where you can get ideas. But his sense of when the grooves are good is really strong. Like, we'll do a few takes and he'll say, this one feels good to me. He's great at that, all of it. I mean, his sense of the song, you know, what light will the song shine best in? He's got a great sense of it. And the stuff he does all Scorsese's films now.
Wow.
And he's just one of the nicest guys and one of the most talented people. And not many people know of him, but the people that he makes records with, and there's a lot of them, are all aware how good he is. Special guy.
Well, that's the thing is I know of him from you know, his time making records with Jules Shear, and it seems like it seems like if he's making records with you, he's in for the long haul. Like, he doesn't just come in for one project.
Oh no, Stewart's a real, he's the real thing, and his sense of, from doing big band stuff like with the 20s kind of music that he does for Boardwalk Empire, to doing rock and roll, you know, to all kinds. He's a real complete musician himself, and just has a great grasp of different vibes and can help you get there. I mean, if you listen to American Ride, this new record, it sounds amazing. It just, it's, the sounds are great, the grooves are great, the band played great, and Stewart just helped steer the ship.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
And is he a guy producer-wise that does the thing where he kind of looks at the songs that you have and kind of assesses things before you jump in? I mean, what sort of, I guess, suggestions did he have as far as like steering this thing?
Well, I had a batch of 13 songs. I don't go in and make, you know, I don't go in to record 25 songs and then pick them. I usually have a real particular idea, and one or two songs we might debate, but his input is always really good. Like, he'll say, no, we can't miss this one. But I usually have a pretty good idea, but he's helpful in that regard. He'll reinforce if I'm thinking, and he won't just yes man me. You know, he'll tell me what he really thinks, which is really useful when you're in the studio.
Well, you co-wrote the title track on this record with Mike Peters. How far back do you go with Mike? Because I know you did some touring in the past few years with Mike. But had the two of you known each other prior to that? Where did you guys first connect?
I met Mike some years back. For a number of years now, I've been part of this Light of Day Parkinson's research organization where we've raised a few million dollars for a Parkinson's research on behalf of a friend who has it. Springsteen's been involved, I think, 10 of the 13 years. And we've been touring, I think, the last 10 years all around Europe every winter. Songwriters, you know, Alejandro Escovedo, myself, Jesse Malin. And in some cities, when we were in Wales, Mike Peters joined us. So we've been doing a lot of those shows together, Mike. We became friends, and I'm a big Alarm fan from way back. And he's a really the Mike Peters story is a story we could talk about that for a while. He's a very special guy. He's had cancer twice, very serious.
Yeah.
Totally survived it. Yeah, so he's beaten it twice, both times. You know, really, he's had quite a battle, and he's a great guy. And he works. Nobody works harder than Mike. And he had an idea on this tour. I toured with the Alarm across the UK. With the band, it was really fun. And Mike said that he had a side project that they would do Europe, and they were making an album. And it was Mike Peters, the Alarm, Slim Jim Phantom of the Stray Cats, the drummer, and Captain Sensible, the Damned. And the fourth chair, different people would take that spot, and he wanted me to be on the album. He said to write something for it. So I just got my guitar one day, and I had an idea, and I wrote American Ride top to bottom. And when I saw Mike, we were together. I had the lyric, but no guitar. And I was describing the music to him, you know, and it was more, it was a rocker. And he said he had an idea, and he went off 15 minutes in a room, and just, he came up with a couple of different chords. I told him what the chords were, and he put two different chords in there and put the phrase American Ride in the lyric. It wasn't originally in there. I just was the title. It was Journey Across America. And when I played those chords, it gave me a different idea. He was thinking Ramones-like, and I thought, you know what, this could be much deeper and more poignant if it was the tempo that it is now. So it was a great contribution that he made to the song that I had written.
Well, that's what I was going to ask, because, you know, I mean, that was earmarked for a project at the time, you know, so it looks like you pulled that one back and kept it.
Well, that project, because he's been playing with Big Country.
Yeah, right.
He's been touring. He's been very busy. So that project itself
hasn't materialized then.
Well, they
album?
Toured Europe a couple of times over the last few years, but that album, it's dormant at the moment.
Yeah.
I'm sure it'll see the light of day. But
I mean, is it done?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Because you recorded the stuff for it, right?
I didn't.
Okay.
I think they have 10 or 11 things recorded.
Yeah.
And we'll see what, you know, what life it takes. It probably has a lot of bearing on what happens with the Big Country. They're doing well.
Yeah.
And the Alarm. He's very busy, and because he's had these life-threatening situations, very serious. I mean, he had two serious bouts of cancer. 10 years apart. And knock on wood, he's doing all right at the moment. So he works at a frenetic pace.
Yeah.
And so, you know, he takes, picks his priorities and goes. But I love Mike. Mike Peters is a really good man. He's like a Woody Guthrie. He really is. He'll pick the guitar up and walk anywhere and just perform. And he's good at it. He's got a great voice. I've sung on the same mic with him many times. Has a John Lennon quality about his voice.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Somebody else I want to ask you about, Eric Bazillion from the Hooters is another guy you wrote with on this record, along with Frankie Lee, your longtime collaborator.
Yeah.
How important are collaborations like that to your ongoing, your songwriting process? Is that something that you feel that you need, that outside input?
Well, it's just, I've always written, the records I've made, I pretty much wrote all the songs, but the last few songs, Frankie Lee and I have been writing a lot together. And every record's different. I've been writing a ton of stuff on my own of late. And if there's a song that's good that I happen to write with somebody, Eric Bazillion, who wrote What If God Was One of Us.
Yeah.
He was in the Hooters, dear friend for many, many years. Mm-hmm. I knew them when I was on Arista in the early 80s, the Hooters. And we were in Sweden doing a children's cancer benefit together, and he's had an idea for a song. And he said, want to help me finish this? And I said, I loved it, so I just took it and ran with it. So it's not necessary. I have so many songs, but I just pick the songs I like best that I think work together well. I don't really need to do outside writing. I do it when it's fun.
Yeah.
And this was fun, this last record.
Well, I want to dig into something here. I want to talk about the time in the 80s where you kind of slipped out of the public eye.
Yeah, yeah.
As I understand it, you didn't stop creating at that point. You continue to write songs. What were you doing with that material at the point that you, you know, returned to making music with your record in 1991 when that actually came out? It just seems likely that you would have had an overwhelming amount of material to work with, potentially.
I don't think I'll ever be able to catch up.
Yeah.
I walked away from the record business after I put two albums out. You know, a bad experience with an attorney, a manager, and I just felt that there were sharks in the waters, and it wasn't fun. I got into making records anyway. I was a poet, and I wrote songs anyway. I'll always write songs, no matter what I'm doing. That's what I like to do. And when it was more about the business, I'd be going to court in the morning and then playing a gig at night, and I went, you know what? This is not what I had in mind, and I just walked away. I moved back to Buffalo with my wife and raised a family in the 80s. And I tried to get back in a couple of years later into the business because I was writing songs. I had a couple albums put together. I couldn't get arrested. Mm. And that's why the long drought in the 80s. But I benefited from it because I was able to write and mature as a writer away from the cameras and anybody, you know, looking over my shoulder. So I've been very fortunate, actually, in my journey. People say, oh, it's been a hard road. And there's many tough years, you know, in the 80s, trying to, you know, raise four kids on fumes wasn't easy. But
yeah.
That said, I've really benefited and learned from all of it. Everybody's road's hard. Show me somebody whose road's not easy.
Yeah.
Michael Jackson, there's a perfect example. I mean, that guy, I mean, my goodness, he's gone, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's nobody's road is easy. And I've benefited from it. I never got a chip on my shoulder. I'm still positive, very optimistic, as always. I think I'll go to my grave, you know, that way. And I'm happy about that.
Well, I think it's interesting because I think that, you know, we talk to songwriters that, like, you know, they're not generally writing unless they have a project in mind or whatever.
Oh, no.
I'm
not like that at all. I just write to write.
Yeah.
You know, something, whether it's a song about politics or a love song or just an out-and-out, kick down the door, blow the roof off rocker. If I get an idea, I'll just write it. That's what I do. And I just, you know, collect. I just write songs. And when I feel there's a collection that might work together, and I'll make a record. I've already got another one written. Another collection already ready to go. I haven't recorded yet, but I'd love to do that.
In those years, you know, where you were, you know, I mean, really focusing on raising kids and stuff like that. Did mm-hmm. you get into anything else, like, you know, writing songs for other people and stuff like that?
Well, I had a publishing deal. Part of the thing that helped me get through those years was I had a publishing deal, and I did some co-writing in the 90s as well. A little bit, not a lot. That was never a priority, you know. I'm trying to do a little more of that now, but it was never a big priority of mine.
Yeah.
You know, my interests were just in the songs that I was writing. You know, it meant something. I like things that mean something to me. If it doesn't mean something to me, I'm not going to do it, you know.
Yeah.
My.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, when you got back into the studio, how easy was it for you to get back in there after such a long break and, you know, find that rhythm of being an artist again?
Well, I was always, the truth of the matter is, I was just always being an artist. I didn't record.
You never really stopped. Yeah.
I didn't record, never really stopped, you know. It was just a continuous process for me. And in the 90s, I was doing a lot of recording. Like, I would write, Frankie Lee and I did a lot of writing. And we were constantly recording in my apartment. I have a little studio. And I really kind of honed my skills in the studio during those years. So I did a lot of recording. So now I'm so at ease and comfortable. I love it. I love recording.
Well, looking back a little bit, kind of along those lines of being comfortable, your beginnings, you got signed originally as an acoustic artist and then made that first album with a band that wasn't necessarily your band. Did what came out feel representative of who you thought you were as an artist at that point?
Oh, absolutely. When I was playing, I got signed when I was playing as an acoustic artist, but I was playing rock and roll songs. I just couldn't afford a band. So when I got signed with Arista, I put a band together. So that was a band I put together.
Okay.
And the songs were written to be rockers. They always were. And when I was playing them live, I was jumping off the stage, introducing imaginary people, and, you know, musicians behind me. So in my mind, they were always rock songs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I just was interested in that because I didn't know what that would be like, you know, being in a band that potentially had been assembled for you, so that helps to know that you put it together.
I put it together with friends of mine, and I did a bit of playing with one of the guitar players in the band. We worked out some of the arrangements, Clay Barnes and I. You know, he's a great guitar player from a band called The Criers.
Oh, yeah.
They were on Mercury in the, I don't know, early 80s.
Yeah.
And but I'd never had high school bands or college bands. I was just a poet. I was writing songs, and in my head I had all these arrangements and whatnot. So now I'm able to execute them. I've got a great band. I've always been lucky having really good bands. So this is my favorite time right now.
Was that your first time in a recording studio at that point?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, I mean, because
we went for a week, knocked the album off, and that's the first time I was ever in a studio with a band, and it came out pretty good.
How much did you have to deal with as far as, you know, outside label input, as far as the songs, what needed to happen,
great.
The songs and all that?
No,
kind
I've
of
been
stuff.
Very lucky. You know, Clive Davis signed me to Arista. I made two records, and every time I presented a collection, the two albums I made, Clive said, yeah, great, go.
Yeah.
So there was no meddling, I'm happy to say. And with Columbia, same thing. You know, I wrote songs, came up with a collection, and Rick Chertoff, who was executive producing the record, he said, yeah, this is great, let's do it. So I've been lucky. I avoided that. I don't think I would have. I wouldn't have continued if people were wanting me to do other things than I was interested in doing, I wouldn't do them. I mean, I do this because I like the songs and the music. I'm not going to do something somebody else wants. Why?
Yeah.
You know? I'm not into being an American Idol. That's not why I'm here. I do it, I do it because I... Not to knock that, but I'm not here just to get famous. I'd love to be stinking rich, but I'm not here... I'm only here because of the songs. It's not about me. It's about the songs. And the songs have a life of their own based on my own personal experience or how I see things in the world. And I'm not looking to be made into something. That was never what I was about.
Yeah.
I wouldn't do that for 5 minutes. So I'm lucky that way.
You know, somebody else I want to ask you about that worked on that first record was, you know, Roy, that of course did all the Simon and Garfunkel stuff.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. I mean, were you aware of that stuff they had done? Was that something that drew you in, the idea that you were going to get to make an album with that guy?
Actually, absolutely. I picked Roy because he had worked with a Love and Spoonful.
Oh, nice.
He recorded Love and Spoonful. I knew he did Simon and Garfunkel. He was known for that. And I always liked their stuff, but I was going to make a rock record. But that he worked with a Love and Spoonful, that appealed to me. I always loved their records. That's why I picked Roy. And he was very nice, loved the material, and we had a great time making that record.
Well, you go out and you tour that record and then go back in and do the second album. Did you feel like you were in a better place with more perspective and, I guess, experience to make an album at that point?
No doubt. I mean, we made the first record, and next thing I know, having never toured with a band, I never played live. We did 2 or 3 weeks of touring, and next thing I know, I'm opening up for The Who across the U.S. Pete Townsend was a big fan of the first record, and The Who's management came to see me in L.A. at the Roxy, and next thing I know, we're touring across the country, opening up every night for The Who. It was a great, great experience. Great people, you know, from management on down. Pete and Roger are friends to this day. I'm living a dream. It was like, man, it was just incredible. Something I'll always treasure.
What do you feel like you picked up from that experience? Because, I mean, that is valuable learning time.
Yeah.
Like, with guys that definitely had seen a lot.
The Who, I watched, Pete said to me one time, he said, the bigger place you play, the more exaggerated you have to make it, the expression. And I've been on stage with Springsteen many times, and Bruce is very, very generous inviting artists that he likes on stage. And I played Giants Stadium in front of 70,000 people with Bruce, Shea Stadium. And I've learned a lot from Bruce and the E Street Band watching, you know, being on stage with them. And they play for the right reasons to begin with. It's not a show-off show. It's they love to rock. Bruce loves to play and rock. And, you know, I think the more you do something, hopefully the better you get at it. So I've had some great experiences. I toured with Ringo Starr, the All-Star Band, and got to sing I Get By with a Little Help from My Friends with Ringo. I mean, I'm a Beatle freak. You know, as a kid, I loved the Beatles. And I got to tour and sing with Ringo. So, I mean, I've been really fortunate.
Just crazy.
My journey's been really interesting, you know, and it hasn't been easy, but it's been amazing. And now, with more life experience under my belt and confidence, you know, I mean, I was always very confident, you know, almost stupidly so. It's Johnny. We're doing the band's sound check in the other room. I'll be there in a minute. But
well, for folks that don't know, where did the Bruce connection come in? How did that come about?
Well, I knew Patty Scalfa, Bruce's wife, from the early 80s when she used to sing with Southside Johnny and the Asbury Jukes along the Jersey Shore in the Northeast. We did a lot of shows with them, and, you know, we would hang out with the background singers, so we were friends. And in 91, I put a record out on Columbia called Places I've Never Been, and Roger McGuinn, Richard Thompson are on that record. And I was in Los Angeles doing interviews, promotion, whatnot for the record, and I saw Patty at a hotel. She saw me, she was having lunch, called me over and congratulated me on the record and told me how much her and Bruce liked it and when was I playing. They wanted to come see me. And I met Bruce, you know, maybe a few weeks later, and we've been friends ever since. It was just really, Bruce is the kind of guy, when people ask me about him, he's what you hope he would be.
Yeah.
You know, he really is. Not a day goes by that he's not grateful for the life that he has. I mean, he's earned it. I mean, all these years, the guy's earned it. And he's inspired and, you know, thrilled many, many people for a long, long time. It doesn't go to his head. He just still loves it like a young teenage rocker. That's when the way he digs music, and he's always paying attention to new bands, who's coming up, who's a new good songwriter, what's a new good band. He loves it like he always did, and he wears it very well. You be that famous, good luck. Keeping your head on straight. That's a tall order. They don't give classes on how to deal with success.
Yeah.
You know, hence the many train wrecks that happen with people that are famous. Bruce handles it really well. So since 91, when I first met him, and in the past few years in particular, you know, he's just been so supportive and encouraging, and God bless Bruce Springsteen.
Well, I think, you know, too, it's rare to find people in this business like Bruce that are still music fans at this stage of their career.
Absolutely.
Where he's still going out and consuming, like, you know, going to see a show like the Gaslight Anthem or, you know, whoever it is, you know, Dropkick Murphys.
And he means it. It's not just he's no poser. He is.
No.
He is what he seems. And if anybody listening to this were to hang out with Bruce, having done it numerous times, you know, a bunch of times, he's a regular guy, you know, and he talked to you like a regular person, you know, and yet it's not. He's Bruce Springsteen, and he's got a great body of work, and, he's amazing. He's in Europe now having a blast, playing to stadiums, as it should be.
It seems like that association with him has kind of added an extra interesting dimension to your fan base.
Well, you know, Bruce's fans are, they're rabid, their passion for his music, I deeply respect. You know, I love the Beatles, I love the Stones, love Dylan. you know, the British invasion stuff as a kid growing up. You know, I loved all the music that was played in the 60s. I just dug all that, you know, Motown, R&B. And to have Bruce's and Bono's support and encouragement, just, I've always been confident. I wasn't looking to walk in anybody else's shoes. That wasn't my interest. And I've always been pretty confident. But to have their support, Lou Reed's as well, has meant the world to me, because it just makes me think, well, I must be doing something right if they're digging it, you know, people that I respect. So, yeah, it's been a great influence, I think.
Well, at this point, being an indie artist, I think has really opened things up for you, obviously, creatively.
Oh, it's great.
How do you strike that balance between having the freedom to do things your way with also having, I guess, enough creative input from outsiders to keep things enough in the zone of where they need to be? Because it seems like there are certain individuals who need at least a little bit of guidance to keep from spending 10 years on, like, say, an ill-advised rock opera or something like that.
Well, I've always really kind of listened to my own drummer. You know, I've kind of always just had my own. I haven't had a lot of outside input. I'm open always to creative suggestions, but I've been lucky in that way. I kind of just followed my own muse. That's really been my course from with Clive Davis in the early days to the present. I make these records the way I want them, the way I hear them in my head.
Yeah.
I've really been lucky. I would give that advice to anybody listening who is, you know, has musical aspirations or any kind of artistic aspirations, poetry, you know, filmmaking, any kind of artistic endeavor. First, listen to your heart first. You know, if you believe it and it means something to you, then there's a chance it might mean something to somebody else. And then maybe you got something. But by all means, you got to do what's in your own heart that feels right. That's always been my oar in the water, my anchor.
Creatively in this new world, is there enough space for you to get out all the musical things that, you know, pass through your mind and pen?
No, there's just not. I mean, I've got so many recordings, you know, of songs that I've written over the years. At some point, I'll maybe just have to start releasing some kind of bootleg series of, like, the home recordings. You know, there's so many of them. And I just probably put them out like that. I'm not an engineer. I'm not technically minded. I just try to get character on tape. If you can get character there and you have a decent song, you might have something. So there's too many. I will never get it all out.
Are there still things you're working to get better at?
Oh, yeah. I'm always be a better human being, you know.
Yeah.
To be more compassionate, you know, piano playing, guitar playing, singing. I'm not much of a singer, more of a storyteller, really. But, yeah, I'm learning all the time. I mean, this last record, I learned a lot more, you know, and I'm sure the next record I'll learn more. And on stage, as a songwriter, and in the studio, I really feel I'm learning in leaps, growing in leaps and bounds. I've got lots more to learn, and it feels good. I like that feeling. Still hungry. Still hungry.
You're a few shows into the tour now. How's the new material going down?
I've been touring for the last 2-3 years solid. So this is just ongoing.
An extension? But
it's an extension of what we've been doing.
But how much have you been playing the new material in those shows?
A lot.
Okay.
I mean, you know, I'm playing a lot of the new album, you know, and can you hear Heaven Help the Lonely in the background? Yeah. There we go. Whoa.
Well, as we can hear, the band is certainly, you got a good band at this point.
Great band. I'm really very fortunate. Good people, great musicians. Take no prisoners.
Well, final bit here. What's ahead for you here for the rest of the year? You're going to get out and obviously promote the new record. And, you know, what's on tap?
Well, I'd love to make another record like tomorrow, but I'm busy right now promoting the record, touring, trying to get the word out about it. American Ride is as good a record as I've ever made. And I'm excited about it. I think people that hear it, I mean, I know the reaction already, the reviews that are in, and friends of mine, their reaction is, and fans, they're really digging it. So I think anybody who hears it, you know, I'd give them their money back if they weren't blown away by it. So this year I'll be spending time doing that. I'd love to get into the studio as well. And the band sounds pretty good.
Well, I think we got a good show on tap tonight, and, you know, good luck as you continue your way out there. And, man, you know.
Thank you so much, Matt. Thank you.
You said it, man. This record's getting great, great response, and it looks like great things are ahead.
I think at the end of the day, if you believe in what you're doing, you know, that's 90%. If you believe in it, follow your heart, just keep working at it, and give it everything you got. Don't leave anything not on it. Just give everything you got. And yeah, in my case, it's worked. I'm having a ball. These are great days.
Cool.
Thank you, Matt.
Can we wrap it up there, man?